I want to explore a little bit the theme of being forsaken. Being forsaken. Now, the Bible is very clear time and again that God will not forsake those who love him. This is absolutely clear. very clear. Isaiah 42, 16, 41, verse 17, all through the through Deuteronomy. God will not forsake those who love him. And yet, it is likewise emphasized that God will forsake those who turn away from him. It will be a punishment for Judah's sin to be forsaken by God. See that really clearly, Isaiah 2, 6, Jeremiah 23, 33, etc. God would forsake Israel only if they forsook him. You forsake me, I'll forsake you. Deuteronomy 31, very clear about that. And so you come to the Lord's words on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Or how have you forsaken me? And I'm aware that it would appear to be, when he says in Aramaic, Sabachthani, that he's alluding to the ram entangled in the thicket. It's as if he's quoting the psalm, but thinking, how have you entangled me? I thought that I was going to be Isaac in the type. I thought I was going to escape at the last minute. But I am entangled. I am the entangled one. I am the ram. Be that as it may, I want to focus upon his usage of this word forsaken. Because, as I say, it's tying in to a strong Old Testament theme that God will not forsake those who trust in him, but he will forsake those who forsake him. And that was the repeated, stressed penalty for Israel's disobedience to the covenant. I want to suggest that the Lord Jesus was so identified with sinners, particularly with a condemned Israel who had broken the covenant, that at the very end of his human existence, he reaches a peak of identity with them to the point that this is how he feels. That, oh, I have sinned. I've been forsaken because I've sinned. I think that he did, if you like, panic when he says this. And he says it, just seconds before he died. He said this right at the end of his time on the cross. My suggestion is that he was so identified with sinful man, particularly with Israel who had forsaken God, he was to such an extent our representative that he feels himself to be a sinner. And in perhaps his afflicted state of mind, I mean, hanging all those hours there on the cross in such torture with the metal of the nails directly in his bloodstream, in incredible pain with dehydration issues, it would almost be certain that his mind would have been affected. That was just part and parcel of the whole awful torture process that he was going through. And so in that moment, he panics, if you wish, that he has sinned. You've forsaken me. You've entangled me. When actually he hadn't sinned. And I think that shows the extent of his identity with us. Now, what this means in practice is that when you sin, and you feel out of fellowship with God as a result of that, because you have forsaken him, you don't need to think, well, Jesus wouldn't know how I feel. Or, very well, he had our nature, he was our representative, but he doesn't know how this feels. In a wonderful way, he actually does. Because he was so identified with us that although he did not sin, he felt forsaken by God, which was the punishment for sin, for breaking the covenant. And so even actually committed sin does not necessarily form a barrier of understanding between the Lord Jesus and ourselves. He can understand even that, even though he did not sin. And I think that is the huge significance of this cry from the cross at the very end of his life. He is that identified with us. When we say that the Lord Jesus was our representative, that must not be any painless few words. That is no mere theological position or proposition out of biblical exposition. This had huge meaning in practice. The Lord was totally identified with us, with sinful man, with a Judah who had broken the covenant, etc. And that identity is what we say yes to when we are baptized into him, when you cover your body in water representing the Lord's death, or his burial more specifically. I think perhaps because we are so far away from his crucifixion that we can identify better with his burial than his actual time of suffering. And of course, coming out of the water is his resurrection. We are beckoned to that by him on the cross, that to see him there should elicit from us a desire to respond in identifying with him. And I think, and we'll discuss this perhaps later when we talk about Romans 8, when Paul talks there about Jesus having sinful flesh and condemning sin, in the flesh, I think that he has in view there not so much the Lord's nature, not so much the Lord's life, but particularly the Lord's death, that there he achieved this total point of identity with sinful man. And even in our human experience, that is still possible. A parent can so love a child that you really do identify with their pain, with their situation to a pretty high degree. And so it is, I think love, part of loving somebody is identifying with them. And I'm talking about love in the true biblical sense of love, not the passing emotion, but the real long-term, high-commitment love, the love which is a new commandment, to love as I have loved you. That is the love which, with its level of commitment to the beloved, to the other, enables us to totally identify. And of course, Jesus had this for us. So this is not in any sense to make us blasé about human failure, about sin, weakness, etc., forsaking God, not at all, but it is comfort in that moment and in that situation that you are never too far from God whilst you are alive, that the Lord Jesus, through his sufferings, has identified with you.